Monday's not the same without Rocket. He's back again to kick it off for round 9 summations. Good morning, Rodney.
Morning, Daniel. Nice. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good. Good to be here.
Can I go first up?
Oh, he's up and away. Yeah. He's opened the batting. He's put the pads on. He wants to wave his head.
He's aggressive.
It's a good track. He's going in.
Listeners couldn't see him. He's
we want to a little bit of sort of Chris Yorman type activity off the top, do you think? Can we go down that path?
Who?
Chris Yorman.
Who's Chris Yorman?
Sort of a David Spears type setup. You know who David Spears is?
Well, I've heard of David Spears.
Okay. I'm desperate for you to tell me, Rocket.
I'm on the spot.
Your relationship with Scott Morrison.
Oh, David Spears. You're right.
Oh, right. Okay.
Because this is a really interesting story, I think, anyway.
We'll be the judge of that.
Because he's had a stunning victory on Saturday night, and you two are quite close.
Oh, I wouldn't say we're quite close. Our wives are reasonably close. I've had dinner with Scott a couple of times a while ago when I lived in Sydney. And so where I lived in Sydney, the next-door neighbour had a gift shop in Randwick. We lived in Randwick. And Scott's wife, Jenny, worked there. And she used to come back a lot to next-door neighbour's house, and my wife would go next door and have drinks and do whatever. And then we had dinner, and then my wife helped at the shop as well. So become reasonably friendly, and just kept in touch with Jenny, and so had dinner with Scott a few times at that stage. But he's a very big rugby league man, didn't understand AFL that much, and I've seen at times he's put some tweets out about his connection to AFL and why he's got an affinity now with AFL.
He backs for about 7 clubs, doesn't he?
I think it's once in a while, then the Bulldogs, when I was at the Bulldogs, I think he was.
So did he follow the Bulldogs because of you?
That's what he said in the tweets, yeah.
He'd be a Ball and Tigers man these days. Scott may be following the Ball and Tigers.
But it was a great win, wasn't it? It was unbelievable, unbelievable effort. Well,
Adam was happy.
But it shows But essentially, I know we're in sport and we all these cliches we use, but it was terrific perseverance and work rate that he had to be able to get over the line, and it won people over.
Discipline. Consistency of message.
Did you send him a congratulatory text?
Not yet. Right. It's settled down, but I reckon I will. Yes.
Very nice. I wasn't aware of your relationship with the Prime Minister.
So does he, like, do you speak much now on the phone or anything like that?
No, I haven't spoken for a while. No. Is that it?
Thank you very much. Well, David Spears is running the interview, so it's up to him on whether or not we move on to the world of sport.
Well, we'll just take a look at Corangamite, just see the latest swing, because that's still in play. Just waiting for the postals to come.
We're still voting, still counting votes, are we?
Yeah, well, we are, because the postals, they'll probably.
No one cares, mate. Let's talk footy, and Rocket Easy's here to do that with us for round 9. No one cares about Corangamite.
Henderson does.
What we do care about is the footy on the weekend. Rockets, we had an interesting day yesterday. Let's start with yesterday. It's fresh of mind.
Yes.
We had the Tigers go in undermanned again against the Hawks at the MCG. Yeah. We had Port Adelaide put up a pretty resilient performance to defeat the Gold Coast in the end by 38 points. And then we saw the Giants do a number on the Blues. Mm. Which one of those surprised you the most?
None of them, really.
None of them?
Port, I think. We talk about Gold Coast being young, but the Port's list of injuries they've got, most of those first two games, Richmond and Hawthorn, but certainly Port got a lot of injuries, 8 of their best 10 out. Mm. And when you look at the list of numbers that have played less than 10 games, they had, I don't know if they had a younger side than the Gold Coast. They were really young. And for them to win by 6-7 goals was a terrific effort, really. And probably could have won by more. They had a lot of inside 50s, but it rained. But yep.
And at halftime, that game was absolutely in the balance.
In the balance, 4 points in favour of the Gold Coast.
So I thought the margin with the rain and the circumstances was a bit of a surprise. I thought it might have been tighter.
But once again, though, half with Port Adelaide, Butters, Rosie, you know, the same sort of names, Dersma, that are coming through as young players that are doing really well. You know, Willem Drew's done some good things as well at times through the first couple of months. That they are kind of rebuilding in front of our eyes and still being able to win games.
Yeah. No, you have to look at the list of players that are out.
Yeah, the entire leadership group.
Yeah, it's a big, you know, there's a lot of talent out. And it was wet yesterday, so Big Body, Gray and Wines, if they play yesterday, they have a really big win.
I know it wasn't the biggest game of the weekend. Obviously, it was probably the least interesting in some ways. But I did want to mention Travis Boak, because Travis Boak has now, in the 9 games played, 7 of the 9 games, he's had 30-plus disposals. He's got career high average, which is, he smashed that by 5 since his best, which is in 2014, because he's gone from being this high half forward as he was back to being a traditional midfielder, averaging 11 more disposals a game than he was last year. This is a guy that is meant to be coming towards the end of his career. He has been amazing.
Have we got an explanation from Hinkley or him as to why the reason for his, well, not transformation, but he's now a midfielder as opposed to half forward. Why he was playing a half forward for a number of years.
So what they thought was that they needed to go past him. So Paul Pepper had essentially taken his job in the midfield. They tried him on a wing, but they thought that his best position was going to be as that high half forward. So the likes of Ollie Wines and even to a point, Brad Ebert had gone ahead of him.
Wingard
was another one. Yeah, so the feeling was that his best had gone past him. He'd been having problems with his knee for quite a few years, and he struggled in that role, Travis Boak.
It's a hard role to play. He had a couple of years ago. He was playing it really well because he's a power runner and he was able to get through the lines pretty well. But I always wondered why. What was the explanation? So I maybe thought that was it. But now it's funny because Paul Pepper kind of hasn't come on that well. Stagnated, but
I speak highly of Travis a lot on this program because he's such a loyal guy. You know, he was one that they tried to lure back to Geelong, and quite a couple of other clubs have tried to get him out of there, and he stayed firm and stayed at Port Adelaide to the point that others felt, well, Travis has done it, I've got to do it. And I just think that even the last couple of years where he's playing a role he really didn't want to play, but he was doing it because that's what the team or the coach wanted him to do. And now we see what happens when he gets opportunity, and that's only really become
Because
of injuries to others that he's got back in there.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that's the best thing for Port Adelaide, for him to be having career high numbers. I mean, I think that last point you make is really relevant, that they didn't have other players to put in that high half sort of role to impact. The Chad was doing it for a bit, but he was flaky at times. And now they've got these young kids who they can play in those roles who are having a big impact, Butters and Rosie and the other guys. Dersma is the other one. So, I mean, they've got guys they can throw through there so they can free him up. Injuries obviously play a part with Wines being out and Hartland and those sort of guys and Ebert and Gray. But I think, I'm not sure that's the best thing for Port Adelaide long term for Travis Boak to be having career high numbers.
Well, I think it's only happening because of the injuries.
It is what it is.
Yeah. And like, he's had to go back and captain the team because the whole leadership group is out.
I tend to disagree with you, Daniel. I think at the start of the year, they didn't have super injuries, and they were still playing him there. And I think through form,
they've got
a lot of youngsters in anyway. So having experience in the right spot, you know, got Wingard who's left, who's gone, and they've traded. Gray's had injuries, and hasn't had a great preseason, so he's not going in there. So there's two players they don't play in the centre square.
Yep.
And they need some experience, as Brendan said, that Paul Pepper's dropped off a little bit. So the fact he's in there and he's playing exceptional footy, and they still want to win games.
Still helpful.
The fact he's helping them win games. I think it's a great move. And the birth certificate can be misleading at times. The players are 31 can still play to 35, 36. So they've still got 4 or 5 years left in them. Some finish at 27. So I think the birth certificate is a bit irrelevant.
Some are victims of circumstances. So it was almost Monday's in the same boat, where Monday, you watch Monday now and he's going so well at 31 or 32. But I think they trialled him as that half forward.
Yeah, they did. He was playing a centre half forward the last couple of years.
But said, let's develop and give opportunities to the guys.
Yeah.
There's like Chera, Brayshaw.
Yep.
And so a couple of these guys haven't progressed and developed as they'd hoped. So now it's like, well, we'd still want to be competitive. So Monday, you go back in there because
Neil's gone.
So should be another opportunity for a young kid to stand up and go, yeah, here I am. I'll take your spot. But then Monday's come in and he's performing. He's always been capable of it, but just because of circumstances where the club at, he's somewhat suffered for a couple of years.
It's the fascinating part of list management discussion is those sorts of things, is that guys that have been sort of stuck as that high half forward and possession numbers go down, if you get him to go to your club and play a more central role, what is he capable of doing? It's really interesting. And I think Port Adelaide made some hard decisions. I think a few people were very surprised that they were happy to get rid of Wingard, because they have been a team that sort of been oscillating inside and outside the eight now for a little while. And they thought, no, we've got to change. And we're going to go to the draft, and we think we can bounce quite quickly as a result of getting good players in the draft, and they've done extremely well.
Well, they found some beauties, no doubt about that. 38-point winners yesterday. They kept Gold Coast to one goal after half time. That's helpful.
Gold Coast kind of kept themselves to one goal as well.
Yeah, but Gold Coast have proved again their hub team to play.
Yeah, that's right.
Discussed it a couple of weeks ago that you go play Gold Coast now, and you expect
a dull game of football.
Well, that as well, but you expect a hard game of football.
Yeah.
Which is a good result for them. Now, yesterday at the MCG, Richmond put on a bit of a clinic in the second half again to overpower the Hawks by six goals. We were talking about this game, obviously, on Friday in the build-up, Rocket, and whether or not the Tigers can continue their momentum with the players that they have out against a team like Hawthorn, who played so well and owned the game against the Giants. What did you expect from the Hawks leading into that game against the Tigers yesterday?
I think what I expected that we got early. The Hawks dominated the game early. They had a plan. They executed except kicking goals. They had one goal four. Then McAvoy got injured, and he laboured to halftime.
How big of an impact did that have, because they lost their dominance that they could have had without Richmond with a recognised ruckman?
Yeah, I thought Segler did okay.
Well, he was going well around the ground.
But they lost some height.
Midfielder.
They lost some height in the forward line.
Yeah.
McAvoy couldn't jump. He couldn't have the second and third efforts. And then Mitchell Lewis got concussion, so they had no tools there at all. So it seems a common thread that that's three games now. They've lost two players by about half time. So the Bulldogs and Kilda. I think they could have won those previous two. I don't think they probably would have won this one.
Yep.
It was a game really of keepings off. I think the uncontested total between the two, the average for the year's 450 was 550. It was a really uncontested game. The pressure factor was down a lot. And it's interesting that Hawthorn didn't want to get into a handball. They wanted to kick. But once they handballed, they actually turned it over because they got swarmed by the Tigers. So you can see why they wanted to do it. And then the Tigers chipped around. The Tigers looked a bit more efficient going forward and looked a bit more dangerous going forward. So, no, they certainly deserved to win and looked pretty good, actually, the Tigers. I don't mind the way they play.
That's some really good moments.
Yeah, after halftime, Tigers became more efficient with the ball, because early on it's kind of, let's play a bit of keepings off. Tigers said, we know what Hawthorn are going to do, so let's kind of play the same game. And it was a
bit of Bruce Free activity.
I think it was a bit like the Collingwood Western Bulldogs game earlier in the year, where it was keepings off and both were playing the same style.
Well, one point, both teams, whenever they had the ball, there was no movement from either team. They all just stood still.
And the number of times Hawthorn's forwards are so high up the ground that when they went to go forward,
they had nowhere to get
nowhere to go, and they look up. Wide lens goes to Richmond, two blokes sitting back.
And you see what the Hawks did. They flutter between the arcs. They didn't sort of roll back in the back 50, even though they get worried about height back there. They just, all their forwards come in between the arcs. So the Tigers had nowhere to go, so they stymied their run. It was a bit of a stalemate for a while.
We talked about Hawthorn a lot last week after beating the Giants, and we kind of thought, well, you know, what does this mean for the competition? Because it was such an impressive win. Against a team that we thought were as a premiership contender. You've seen them a bit lately. Where do you rate them?
I think they're a hard one to assess because of their injuries. And I think those two, as I said, St Kilda and Western Bulldogs, I think they deserve to win those games. So they'd be 6-3 at the moment. I think there'll be about the eight, just outside the eight, depending on injuries. They haven't got a lot of depth. They've got some youngsters, but they've got some top-end age as well. They've got some older players. So, Bruce got injured as well. So they really get decimated a bit with some injuries. Where do you rate them? I think if they had everyone available with Clarkson steering the ship, because they've got so many different game styles, they can fluctuate in and out. They can really cause some trouble for teams. So they could beat Geelong, but they could lose to Carlton, which they nearly lost. Obviously down in Tassie. So they're in that flux. But I think if they have a reasonable team, they can cause some trouble for teams. There's no doubt, because of the way they structure up.
Yeah, I think the structure and the system is interesting in the discussion against a team like Richmond, who have got similar level of probably more injuries to their star players, and but still are able to produce week in, week out, because their system is very different. Their system is based around pressure and run and carry, whereas Hawthorn's a bit more disposal efficiency, move the ball quickly by foot, by hand, and don't necessarily require the run that the Richmond do and the pressure that they play with. So nothing but admiration for the way that Tigers are playing with this group of players.
No doubt.
They were brilliant yesterday.
They were really good against Freo. I think everyone thought that they were vulnerable that day because of the players that they had out.
Yep.
But it is a bit what you're saying, Huff. It's not about the players they have out. It's actually just the way they're playing with the players that are there. It's a really strong brand of footy at the moment.
Yeah, I think... and I think I've noticed, now there's criticism of Lynch and just having coached him. I've noticed when he was playing poorly, he was anchored to the goal square, whether that was by instruction or it was him. But he's got such a big tank. He's not a full forward. He's generally really a centre-half forward that can play closer to goal because he's got such a big aerobic capacity. And now he's starting to... Last week he did, and this week he was getting balls up on the wing, and then he gets back and around, and he can share the load. So the focus is not totally on him to kick goals. And he's kicked three. He took that mark was when paid a free kick to McIntosh. So could have had four. I thought he played well. I thought Sicily did a good job on him. But I think that helps their forward line by him getting up and create space because he draws some attention to him. So it opens up space for other players. Once Riewoldt gets back in, you can see that, I think that chemistry will work pretty well.
But you've got to remember Lynch too didn't have a pre-season, so his strength is what you're talking about. His running ability has kind of hasn't been there, so I think it's only natural then to be stuck in the goal square. And I watched him, did a game on Saturday night a couple of weeks ago, but it was more just giving, you know, waving in the air, kick it in long to me, I'll be fine kind of thing. Now he's finding his fitness where he can get on the move, expose his defenders, because he's got such a big reach, it's almost like you got to play a tall on him, but then you can't because of his running ability. So once he gets that fitness back, I think you'll see him now just really progress and find his feet.
The Tigers are going beautifully, 6-3, equal third on the ladder on percentage.
A bit scary, isn't it?
Without lots of really good players.
That they can be sitting there.
And they've got a solid draw to their bye. They've got the last of the bye, so I think it's round 14. They play North Melbourne, but other than that, they've got three. Got Geelong, I think. They've got Adelaide.
Essendon, North Melbourne, Geelong are their next three.
And then Adelaide after that.
So just quickly, just as a coach though, Rocket, why are they able to do this? So just with what everyone's saying about... It's a great job with the list and what they can. Why are they able to do it?
I'm going to give you a question with notice. We need to get to a break, Rocket. Stand by, 24 past 7. Rocket's with us, round 9 and summation on the Breakfast Club.
He's such a beast and he can fire at any time. And we always knew he'd be back to his best sooner rather than later. He's been working incredibly hard on certain parts of his game. And I think that takes a few weeks to sort of reap the rewards. But tonight he was back to his absolute best, I thought. And, you know, just a powerhouse in the middle and really damaging up forward. So it's good to see.
Dylan Grimes talking about Dustin Martin, 37 disposals yesterday in the Tigers' 36-point win over the Hawks at the MCG. BJ, you were asking Rocket before the break.
Yeah, as to why they're able to do it. So we can all see that they're doing it with the injuries they had, that's obvious, but why are they able to do it?
Oh, I think the players come in, it's an old cliche you're saying, but they're able to play their role, and they're obviously got clear guidelines and clear focus that... Young Baker comes in, this is your role. You'll be able to do this for us. And the guys will be able to... The game is based really on the team defence, but so much intensity and urgency to put pressure on the opposition. And they all buy into it. So obviously there's a fair bit of coaching going on.
Yeah, so is it coaching and
coaching,
their roles
and education,
are defined?
And education during the week. So they know what they've got to do. And probably the VFL team's been quite successful, so they're being trained and coached the same way consistently. And you can see the group... anyone that comes in, they've got a fair bit of trust in them, and so they've got the young lads have got some confidence. So I think their experienced players play well, which does help. I know they've got some experienced helps. Players out, but Hooley plays well, Grimes plays well down back, Asprey's now an experienced player. Lynch has fitted in quite well. So the mids, Martin's back to some form, but now Prestia plays well, so they hunt the footy, they contest, they put pressure on, and they're generally prepared to move the ball forward quickly.
Dustin Martin's 37 disposals, the most he's had in a game since round 17, 2017. They played him, he got a lot of junk ones late, but they played him differently, Hawthorn, because Daniel Howe has usually done the job on him in recent times and done quite well, to be fair, against him. He played in the VFL. He didn't even play. And they just let Dustin play more midfield than forward. yesterday, but they just let him do what he liked.
He played more midfield, did he?
Martin?
Yeah.
Yeah, rather than, because he played a lot of half forward
across the first 8 weeks. He plays predominantly forward and goes up to stoppage.
Yeah.
And he practically does what he wants. So he's...
Yeah, he's like a rogue.
But he actually started a lot of centre bounce.
Hawthorn, you can see that they wanted to put numbers between the arcs and they wanted to have that team defence and give them no space and no quickness of ball movement, which they achieved a fair bit of the time, but allowed Dusty to roam and actually do his thing. And he broke some tackles, which is the old trademark. Probably his 37 equivalent as his 37 back in 2017.
Yeah.
As dynamic, because he kicked a couple of goals, which was good, but you could see there was still the old trademark was coming back, wasn't it?
He had a verve about him. He was up and about. He was, yeah.
So it'll be interesting, teams going forward, do they sit on him? Which I think if you had a player who's could, like Levi Greenwood's done well, or if Howe's done well in the past, that'd be worth doing, because with their injured players out, that, you know, that's their main source, be able to stop that.
Well, Shields has done it in the past as well, which I was surprised he didn't.
Well, he was with him a little bit at times, but he wasn't a real tight, hard tag. He was sort of a nuisance value more than anything.
That's where it's hard, because he comes up to stoppages and then we see him, the stoppage leaves, and especially when the opposition win it, he just kind of drifts forward because he's essentially a forward.
Mm.
So then as a midfielder, if you're playing on him, you go, what do I do? He's now like a forward. Do I stay with him? Because naturally you want to spread and then you get told to get out of the contest. But he's just walking essentially at the back or gets left behind. But that's what he does. And the team know that. So they've got guys around him that helps him play that role and allows him to do that.
The Giants smacked the Blues yesterday, Rocket, by 93 points. Interesting stat coming through Mitch Cleary's Twitter account from the AFL website yesterday. Quarters won in 2019. Carlton have won 15. They've lost 20 and drawn 1. West Coast have won 15 and lost 21. And yet West Coast are 6 on the table, 6 and 3, and Carlton are 1 and 18th on the table, 1 and 8. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, yes. Stats can always be misleading. You win a quarter by 1 point, 1 point.
Yeah, lose a quarter
and lose
10
a quarter
goals.
By 6 goals. So,
we'll take yesterday out of it.
I think, taking both teams, West Coast stay in the contest. They play fairly sedate footy, to be honest, until they need to win it. I think where the Carlton have fallen into trouble, their best footy's against the top sides, except the GWS, and their poor footy's been against bottom teams where they needed to obviously get some wins. But yesterday, we're spoken about attitude. GWS always going to bounce back from last week. They've had a cattle prod. They've been bagged in the media. Melbourne media have gone after them. Okay, we're going to respond. There's no doubt they were going to respond. So you feel for Carlton a little bit. They haven't got the experience to be able to cope with that, I suppose, cyclone that was coming at them. Probably in the end, they could have lost by more. It was all way over by half time. It was 60, 80 points, 70 points at half time. So they probably did a good job to minimise that in the second half. Could have been 120, 130 point loss.
Have a look. Listen to some of these numbers. At half time, the Giants had 111 more disposals, were plus 23 in contested possessions, plus 39 in marks, plus 26 inside 50s, plus 13 clearances, plus 19 scoring shots, and they led by 74 points. That was at half time.
People say, well, why don't they play better at the MCG? There's more space and effect they're running. I reckon their games, it's small ground at the showgrounds there in Sydney. I reckon their games based on contest. And they like the contest. And then they have quick hands and all of a sudden they're in their forward line a lot quicker. Hawthorn now did it well because when they won the ball, they were able to block their space, even though it's a bigger ground. And then GWS went sideways, where the smaller ground, they're through the contest and all of a sudden they're inside the forward 50. And maybe they do like the confines of a smaller ground. And if you go back to Geelong, which are narrow grounds, a bit more contest. So try and take that contest out of them.
All right, we've got two coaches in the room. If you're Brendan Bolton turning up today, or they might have a day off tomorrow, we're going to talk to Sam Doherty after 8 o'clock. But if you're the coach, what are you saying to this team that twice now in the last 3 weeks they've been hammered, and in between brilliant against Collingwood? What's your message as coach?
Well, I've been through that. So you've got to take. And it's hard to know what goes inside the four walls. So it depends on the group themselves. Because what you want to get is a response out of it going forward. It's just not a matter of kicking their backside. It's a matter about what's the best way forward psychologically. So you only know what's been said previously. First, you'd have to get the facts about how it happened, why it happened, and then talk about those facts. The fact it's happened twice in 3 weeks is a concern. If it happened at the once, so the North Melbourne can say, well, you not put it in the back drawer, but you say, listen, we take this out of it, but let's be positive. We need to respond. They did that. And then they didn't turn up again on the weekend. So it's whether it's a done at selection, as in send a message, I reckon it'd be more one-on-one, but as a group, they need to face up what they've done wrong. We need to get consistency on A, B, and C. That's not what we're getting, guys. Now I can be positive with you, et cetera, and we've generally done well this year, but this is the facts. We're in a tough competition. We've played a very good side. We fell way short. We need to be more consistent. How are we going to get the consistency? Narrow the focus. This is what we need to get, which they did against Collingwood. They've probably gone out with contested ball. That was their one focus and maybe something else. They need to do that every week. Whether they've been more expansive against the Giants, I'm not too sure.
Half, what would you do?
My conversation would be about upholding the standards that they've set and expected of themselves. And they've been able to do that. Outside of the Kangaroos one, every other game has been a good, solid performance in terms of their effort, their work rate, the defensive pressure, that sort of stuff. Yesterday, it fell to bits. So my conversation would be, okay, this is what we've set up. This is why we've been competitive. And yesterday, for whatever reason, this didn't happen. We can't accept that anymore. And we need to start to make changes at selection. I think the conversation about selection needs to come in, about whether or not you're actually prepared to do this, or you're starting to get fatigued. We need to give you a spell anyway, because you've worked really hard, and it's a naturally buoyant group at that group at the moment with Brendan. So they'd be really disappointed, really flat about that performance yesterday. But it's my conversation would be absolutely about the standards you've set, because they've set pretty good standards. They just haven't been good enough to finish off games. That would be what I'd be focusing on. What would you do, so, BJ, if you're the coach?
So are they standards if they're not living up to them?
Well, but I think outside of the Kangaroos and the Giants game, for the other seven games this year, their standards have been pretty good.
Yeah.
So they are standards, but they're not. Two of the last 3 weeks, they haven't been able to achieve them. So what is that reason, Rocket's point? What is it? Is it fatigue? Is it willingness?
It's a part of that, but to do it twice in 3 weeks, poor performances, just looking at Carlton, to put in a performance like they did, one loss is worse than the other, but
yep.
And it, you know, to lose nearly by 100 points has got based around effort. Predominantly is like, well, there's a real lack of effort there in intensity. So you start with the nuts and bolts, I would have thought. So you talk about structure and all that kind of stuff, but that's
it's mainly basics. They go to get the base, and they got blown away the first quarter. It was all over early, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, can't keep the first goal.
The intensity and urgency of the Giants was that. Hate the term, but they've come to play, and Carlton were on the back foot, and it was a young group going, oh, wow, what do we do?
So, Rocket, as a coach, from your experiences, have you had could you sense a loss like this coming as a coach? Or not so much the
enormity of it.
Yeah, but a performance, sorry. Could you sense a performance where pre-game or during the week, do you go, oh, the boys are off, you know?
Oh, yeah, you can do that. There's not many teams that I've been involved with, groups, including playing. Sometimes when I was playing, it would be okay because you could flick a switch, because the competition was different than those days. There was top six and a bottom six. And there's not many players or teams that can flick a switch. Mm. Way they prepare correlates to the way they play. And you used to say it consistently as a coach, and the players go, oh, yeah, okay, I'll be
you
right.
You play how you train.
Yeah. And you turn up against a team down the bottom and struggling, and players go through the motions, and you have three goals, four goals down a quarter time.
Yeah.
You're giving them confidence. It happens, and it happens at all levels. I see now at the level I'm coaching. It's human nature. So coach, and you used the word narrative last week, you cannot let that pass, because you know, especially through experience, you know that's going to happen, and we need to address it. Stop training. Let's start again. Leaders, call them aside. This is not acceptable. We need to start again. Okay, whatever it takes to go. We need to get a quality performance the way we prepare. And you talk about habits and standards. That's your habits and standards. That starts from Monday. Doesn't start Saturday at
12 o'clock for two, you know, for two game. It starts on a Monday.
Yep.
You have it, and that's what gets some players, the grind. They don't want to go through the grind.
The grind's hard.
Well, grind, yeah, it's tough.
It's easy. Everyone
and
would
people
do it.
Think AFL is sexy and we get a lot of money and fame, and it's a grind. It's tough. And what's the expectations are? You turn up on a Monday, your recovery and etc. Your review process. What are we going to learn? Where are we going to get better? Your input. And the way we're preparing, the way we're going to train. And if you don't do that, especially, it's more and more now, the competition more and more even, I've mentioned it, it's more about attitude than it is about structures and game plan. That comes into it. There's no doubt that's a big load of it. But the attitudinal stuff, if you don't bring it, that's why bottom teams are beating top teams and why some teams are getting smashed is, we spoke about it, and Brendan just brought up that attitude of Carlton the weekend.
RSN 927's Breakfast Club.
The feedback we've got is that it's a slightly more severe sprain of that ankle, but nothing dire. So for those that saw him hobbling around on the crutches post-game, it's all part of the danger show from what we can tell. So he'll pull himself together, and it seems if he's going to miss, it'll be on the minor side.
Minor side, the Danger Show. Chris Scott talking about Patrick Dangerfield after their win over the Western Bulldogs down at GMHBA Stadium by 44 points in the end on Saturday night. That was tight, that game, for three quarters. BJ?
What do we make of Corns' comments on Danger and playing up his injuries? And
I think the thing is, there's probably an element of truth, but it's the second time he said it. He said it a couple of years ago, and he said it while he's in Adelaide. So obviously there's a Corns being from Adelaide and Danger playing in Adelaide and Port v Adelaide. And I took it to Corns' comment about Melbourne was against Simon Goodwin because he was a Crows person. So I always read it deeper, whether I'm right or wrong. I think there's a bit of theatre about what Danger does, but I wouldn't be too worried about it because it's all about him getting his performance. It's his main thing, and his contribution to the team. And if he has got an injury, whether it's minor or major, is about when he gets back on the field. So I think maybe Kane's made a bigger deal of it. People maybe think that that's a case with him, that he's a bit of theatre about. Even the coach let it slip and probably would like to take back those words to say, it's the Danger Show. So, I don't think it's a big deal. I think we move on. What about you as an ex-player? If you were a teammate, what would you say?
If I was a teammate,
that's a good question.
Yeah,
the body language changed when you threw that at him.
If I had an issue with it, I'd probably say something. I'm not sure if anyone else would.
Yeah.
Knowing Danger, there is a bit of theatre about Danger, and if that helps him recover or helps him get up and perform, and because his performance, he can't really
knock it off. And he's tough when he plays. Yeah. He's a tough player.
Do you know what I mean? So if that's the way he deals with it, then fine. But I wouldn't deal with it that way. And so that's fine. So
but isn't
I think there's
it,
a bit of merit in Corns' comment, but I think he's trying to blow it out of...
But isn't there a bit of... Because there is talk around that when he goes down, looks like he's been shot, then all of a sudden he's back playing again. And I think it's more that sort of thing than whether he should have been on crutches or not at the end of the game.
Yeah, maybe. There's a bit there.
So more the reaction to the initial injury. Because
there are times where it looks like he's been shot. You think, oh, God, he's out for 6 weeks. And all of a sudden he's back.
It'd be interesting the reaction
in the next contest.
It'd be interesting the reaction in the coach's box. Everybody would say, oh, it's Danger, you'll be right. He'll be back on.
Yeah.
But I think there is a bit of that. Yeah. I think that's where Kane's...
So that's just how individuals deal with it. I said there's been plenty of those guys that have done it and deal with those things and react that way. Yeah. But I don't do it that way, but... Each of their own.
Well, they had a good win against the Bulldogs, who fought hard, the doggies, must admit.
Oh, I like the dogs.
Tough down there to do what they did, but overrun in the end. In fact, it was only really the last 10 minutes where they blew the game open, Geelong, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, we talked about this during the week, is whether they could match it with Geelong on the scoreboard, because you knew that Geelong were always going to be able to score. Could the dogs do it? And they probably couldn't do it. Well, they couldn't. They couldn't do it as easily as what Geelong could. They're 450 to make the eight, the Bulldogs.
Currently sitting 4-5.
And they beat Brisbane, who are fourth last week. Well, I think they're going okay.
So your point is that they'll make it? Is that what you think?
I think they will. I reckon their last month has been really good. And
no,
I think
been,
they're only going to get better, providing they can stay relatively fit. That's just my view.
Can the Lions keep this up? And they beat Adelaide in dramatic circumstances in the end by a point.
But they were five goals
they set,
up.
They set the game up pretty early, didn't they?
Yeah. I'm not the right person to ask.
No, he's against
not the right. You're the perfect person to ask because you don't rate them. So
no, it's not that I don't rate them.
Are they proving you wrong?
Absolutely they are. Yeah, they're 6-3.
6-3.
I thought they'd win between 6 and 8 games for the year and their improvement would come next year and the year after. But what they're doing, Rocket, is that they are sort of bucking the trend. They're going out there to score. So yes. they're actually putting pressure on the opposition because they're going to score. So it's a very different way to say maybe the Suns are going about it as a developmental team.
I think where the Lions were better against the Crows and what they've been the other games is their pressure was quite good. They tackled really well. So they're adding that. It's good to try and score, and I like that, but you need the defensive part of your game as well to, you know, obviously your setup, but at the same time your urgency and intensity to put pressure on the opposition. And I think they did that. I think they have 80 odd tackles, I think. So they really did put the pressure on the Crows, and I like that part of it because that will enable, along with their scoring, to really give a threat. And they win at home again. It's certainly tough to win up there.
Yep.
Well, Huff, we said this on Friday. I thought that was the most important game Brisbane has had for the year because it was to show whether they're legitimate. It was to beat a team around them on the ladder. They now win to go 6-3 with Fremantle away this week, and then they've got Hawthorn and Carlton. Hawthorn at home and then Carlton. So really, I mean, they could very easily be 8-4. Then you have to talk about them as being a finalist.
Brooks has just dropped another shot here too. His lead is back to 1.
Another one. He's got another 6-footer to not drop 2.
Well, yeah. I'm
he's got that noose around his neck.
No, that's for par.
No, that's for bogey.
What, did he fluff the shot at the back of the green?
Yep.
That's a setback for those that took $11.
Look at us glued to the television. Well, who put those in?
Game changer.
Was it a good win Saturday night by the Bombers?
Yes.
Against Freo, BJ?
I jumped in there early, didn't I?
You did, but keep going.
Just to get... everyone has been potting them, and to a certain degree there's some truth to it, but about being one-trick ponies. So they managed to win in a different way, adapt to what Fremantle brought to the table.
What did they bring to the table that made it such a low-scoring affair?
Oh, well, Freo, 10, particularly the high half forwards, they wouldn't say it's flood back, but they get high up the ground and can congest the ground when the opposition have the ball, so slow them down, so it is hard to move the ball. So, and then when Fremantle do win it back, then they... A lot of times slow themselves down because then they've got to wait for their forwards and everyone else to reset and get forward of the ball. And I wouldn't say their tools are elite runners. I think Hogan's a pretty good runner, but they don't have the cattle to necessarily play that game that they want to actually then go quick enough forward because they don't have the forwards to be able to reset the ground quick enough. But so defensively they're really strong. So and that we've seen Fremantle pull apart a number of teams playing that way. So GWS and kicked over 100 points. I think they kicked over 100 points twice this year. But so Essendon fought fire with fire. They said, well, we're going to...
Not let you score.
Yeah, not let you score. So defensively, that Bombers were a lot better, but they did do it by getting numbers back and congesting the ground and defending the ground really well when Fremantle then won it. So forwards got high, got ahead of the footy, got up the ground. So they did what they need to do and they won differently and they won ugly, but they needed to do that.
So turning up to work today, as they will, how much confidence will they get out of that? Although it was an ugly game, that they're able to do it a different way.
Correct, yeah. The confidence comes from their ability to win with a plan and execute a plan is the word I'm looking for. Execute a plan going into the game. So that's where the confidence comes from. So hopefully, next week it's... We need to beat the Tigers, but this is the way we're going to do it and
have a different plan again.
And then execute it again. And then the confidence is growing and it's like, we're still got plan A, but we can do it a different way and we've proven it.
And again, sorry Adam, but that starts early in the week because normally you give the opposition analysis on a Tuesday and then it probably grows from a Wednesday. Give the information to players early, and this is the way we're training, this is the way we think we can beat Richmond, and you prepare that. You sell the message and the narrative of the week, and the players buy in and go, okay, this is what we're
going to
do.
And plus doing that, the guys go away with it, and whether they consciously or sub, but subconsciously they think about it. So you give them the information really early, and they might be the day before training, and then they're thinking about it. It's like, well, tomorrow we're going to, it's like, well, might be a real hard contest or a really good contest. But so we're going to, you know, we're going to get mouth guards out. Tomorrow's going to be a more contested style of training because we've got to, so you plant the seed early, and it just organically just grows throughout the week.
I mean, I don't think the win should be undersold, because if they lost that Essendon, they would have gone 3-6 going into Richmond this week. And I think their season was over had they lost on the weekend. So to win a tense battle that was very close for a lot of the match, I thought some of the stuff that Dylan Shield did when the game was up for grabs was very impressive. And when Essendon have won, he has been instrumental in virtually every one of those.
Well, can
games.
We just talk about Dill for a second? Because the only knock on him this year, and for some reason, some people, I felt that it's just they were trying to find something, and it was he's kicking, he's his efficiency. So his explosiveness out of contest is second to none. His ability, like, it's extraordinary. And it's a second, no, it's the first time I actually watched the Bombers game because of the work I did on Saturday night. So, but watching up close, it's extraordinary. There's probably four or five guys, you can count them on one hand, that has the ability to do that at his level in the competition. So, and then on the weekend, he was kicking it better, but it's just a little thing. People have knocked him real hard on it. It's probably more so how much they've been riding him for it is the thing that really annoyed me, because the guy's been, you know, busting his chops and doing really well, finding a heap of the footy. So he'd be criticised if he was only getting 12 possessions, but they were, you know, 10 good ones. People would still be whacking him. But it's almost like, yeah, they found a reason he's kicking, but they ran with it for weeks, and they continue to talk about it on whenever he muffed one. Or they ran with it. They've ran with it real hard. So that annoyed me. So it was great to see him. And it looked like it just changed his thought process and decision-making just a little bit, whereas more conscious of lowering his eyes, hitting the target.
He was a bit rushed before.
Yeah.
He had his speed. He didn't steady at all.
Yeah. He's kind of like just looking for long bombing.
Bomb it.
Yeah. So now it's like, he was exploding out of stoppages and then lowering his eyes and having confidence that a player's going to come up at him and looking for it. So it's more, it just looked like that his decision-making is conscious of just lowering his eyes and looking for leading targets as opposed to, I'll gain yardage and kick it 60, but kick it to...
Mm.
One-on-one then quickly turns into a 2v1 because aerial support and all that comes along. So it was a pretty impressive game, but it was good to see him finish off too. And he kicked two goals late. So
yeah, no, he was good.
It was good to see.
He's part of our world here in the Breakfast Club. We love his work, Dylan Shield. Rockets, Sydney hanging on by a thread, aren't they?
Sydney were very good. They should have won the game by more. They were impressive for three quarters. I reckon they ran out of legs. And I think their mentality changed to save the game.
Yeah, no doubt.
They were trying to save the game. So they didn't have which is strange for a Sydney. So they didn't have their dare. They had a pretty dare, and they moved the ball quickly and caused the Kangaroos a lot of trouble. And really, I got to 33 points up early in the last quarter. And
with Josh Kennedy's a late withdrawal.
Yeah, so they've had 1,600 games of experience missing, and then lost Zach Jones in the second quarter with a hamstring. And... So it was a really impressive. So if I was Kangaroo, I'd be really disappointed with that performance. I know they lost by 5 points in the end, but for three quarters they look really ordinary, to be honest. And they kept a couple of goals, and then you could see that when any team tries to save it, they really do struggle.
Yep.
And Sydney have been the best at that over a period of time, but they're a younger team now. And Goldstein could have got a free kick, but
should have got a change.
Yeah, I think the umpire was on the wrong side, so can't blame the umpire. But I think Sydney were, you know, their kids were good. You know, they showed some talent, and I liked more than anything, that Sydney were prepared to take the game on. They moved the ball quickly. They looked dangerous. They're asking North Melbourne a question, where I think the previous, the first 6 weeks, they weren't asking the opposition any questions. Absolutely.
That's a good point, yeah, because going forward, they weren't asking. They'd get to that 50-70 out and they'd stop. And
they weren't challenging the opposition at all.
But it's interesting with Sydney, because there's a lot of disappointment around the fact that they're not where they usually are, but there is a lot of confidence in that young group, and we saw a lot of them to play really well together on Saturday night, which would give them a lot of confidence with that group.
All right, we need to keep moving. Rocket, great to see you as always. Look forward to your company next Monday.
Thanks, boys. Have a good week and good weekend, and hopefully the footy picks up.
Have a chat to ScoMo for us.
Thanks, yeah, mate. I'll pass your best on.
Rocket E with the summation of round 9 of the AFL as DJ misses a putt for par and drops another shot back. That gap is now 2 to Brooks Koepka with about 3 or 4 to play for both.